keep trucking here. So I've got my opening question this morning. Are you ready? This is a fun one. Feel free to use our Cornerstone Connect number for this if you'd like to answer this question, or if you have any questions about our message, if you're listening, if you're watching. What would you do if you won $1 million? What would you do if you won $1 million? Huh? Okay, well, I know what you would do. That's right. Okay. What would you do if you won $1 million? Okay? And in today's economy, that may not go as far as it used to. But that's still, for most of you in here, if not all, that's still a lot of money, right? I would take that. Somebody wants to give that to the church. The church would gladly take that. Okay? So all you've got to do is put 1 million, 84321, push send, and we'll get that set up and we'll receive that on your behalf. God bless you. So yes, you can even text to give $1 million, as long as you have it. As long as you have it to give. That's the stipulation. But we're going to continue in the book of James this morning. And remember, if you've missed any weeks, or especially if you missed part one, we gave you the background of this. James is shifting in this entire letter between people that are oppressed and taken advantage of and those who are doing the oppressing and taking advantage. This is not a New Testament Proverbs like we typically treat James, or we can just pick and choose verses one. But if you look at it as a conversation James is having with both parties, he spares no words or strong words in teaching to either party. And I think that's very important even for the culture we're living in today. And it mirrors much of what is going on. If you remember, there was much conflict between the Jews there in Jerusalem and Judea and the Roman Empire. And there was also conflict between Jews, those that were better off than others. There was conflict even among the priests. And so this is the background of the writing. And we went into more detail in part one about that. And so hopefully you remember that. If not, you can go back and listen to that. But last week, we talked about those that were being oppressed, but were guilty of, do you remember what they were guilty of? Selfish ambition, and I should like give it a reward. Do you remember what kind of envy we talked about? Bitter envy. Thank God bless you. You get your sticker on the way out, Mark. Yes, bitter envy. Not just wanting something, but being very upset that somebody else had something that you wanted. That's bitter envy, okay? And obviously, if you were here, nobody was moved to buy me the two jet skis that I was talking about, the envy problem that I have sometimes, passing trucks, pulling two jet skis. That's okay. It's all right, because it's not really probably a blessing from the Lord. That's probably a selfish desire on my part. But I'm not mad at them for having it. So it's just plain envy, not bitter envy, okay? But today, James is shifting from those who feel like they've been taken advantage of. Now he's shifting back to speaking to those that are well off, to landowners, to merchants, those that would be considered rich at that time, those who might have been taking advantage of other people. And so, James had talked last week about those like feeling like they were taken advantage of. Now he's moving to the wealthy. So this is what I want you to know. In the Roman Empire, there was a couple prominent ways to obtain wealth in the Roman Empire, right? You'd be a landowner, okay? You're a wealthy landowner. You'd make money off your land, whether it was tenant farmers or whether it was slaves working your land. Your land produced income for you. And if you're a wealthy landowner, that came with a certain amount of prestige. You were considered, you were high class. Okay, Erlen, you didn't know you were high class, did you? You're high class. These landowners, man. The other way could be a merchant or trader. Now, they weren't considered in the same class as the landowners, but you could possibly become very wealthy as a merchant or trader in that time. Those are the two prominent ways to become wealthy in the Roman Empire. Either own a lot of land and you did something with it, or you're an entrepreneur and you're a merchant, you're a trader. Okay, and so this is what I want you to know. So James is shifting here. Part one, we talk about the pursuit of wealth. He's going to begin by talking and addressing merchants, and that's going to become clear as we read these verses. So James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17, I want you to read with me. He says, "Now listen, you who say today or tomorrow we will go into that city, this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why? You do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them." And so we see here, he's beginning by addressing the merchants specifically, and you can picture it happening. Like, hey, I'm going to go, I mean, like businessmen, businesswomen, I'm going to go down to Jerusalem, I'm going to go to Jericho, we're going to carry on business, This is what we're going to do, okay? Now, James is not speaking against entrepreneurs, okay? He's not speaking against business projections, worrying about your return on investment or whatever. He's not, that was common even in that day, all right? Even if it was, you know, on their smart rock with their smart chisel, all right, or a quill and papyrus. I mean, that was part of business. But what got them in trouble is, if you notice there, he talked about their arrogant schemes. He talked about them boasting. Okay, so he's speaking to this merchant class as they would travel, these traders. And the problem was not that they were carrying on business, and the problem really wasn't even that they were making money. The problem was they left the Lord out of the equation. So if you read it again, look at it with an eye towards selfishness, self-reliance. He says, yeah, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And James is saying, you know, you really ought to say if it's the Lord's will. You really ought to include the Lord in your equation for your business. And primarily, James was writing to Jewish followers of Jesus. Now, he was writing to any Jewish person that would listen at the time because of the warnings of what would come. But he's talking to people, Jewish people, and primarily those that claim to be followers of Jesus. And what he's saying is, don't leave the Lord out of your business. Don't leave the Lord out of the equation when you're thinking ahead about the money you're going to make, the things you're going to do. And so the picture that James paints here is a merchant or a trader that's just so self-confident in their ability to create their own wealth, and God is not a part of their equation, even if he should be. You boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. So he's speaking here. And when I read this, I can't help but think about human nature. When do we typically turn to the Lord or seek his guidance? When things aren't going well. Yeah, you've heard me say this phrase a lot. We treat God like a cosmic Santa Claus, right? We want stuff. Or we turn to him when something goes wrong, but when things are going well, man, it's all about us. Look what I did. Look what I did. We turn inward, we become very selfish, we become very proud about ourselves and our abilities. We think we can handle it and produce on our own. When that happens, God can easily become second best, which would be the best of a worst scenario, but often he can just become left out altogether and become unimportant. Because God shouldn't even be second best. Do you understand that? But we turn inward when things are going well in times of prosperity. And as we go through this, there is nothing inherently wrong with money or prosperity or producing and working. But as we go through this, you've got to see what James attaches to this. He just as last week, he talked against selfish ambition and bitter envy for those that felt like they were being oppressed and taken advantage of. He turns the tables on the rich, the wealthy, the entrepreneurs. He tells them, man, don't do the same thing. Don't leave the Lord out of the equation. And so the Lord actually warned Israel about this. This reminds me of when the Israelites were getting ready to cross the Jordan. This is in the Old Testament. This is in Deuteronomy. Before they're getting ready to take the promised land, go in and take possession of the land that the Lord had promised them generations before, he warned them about prosperity. He warned them that they might forget him. You can read about this in Deuteronomy chapter 6. I'm going to read about it in Deuteronomy chapter 8 because the passages mirror each other. They're not exactly the same. But if you want to write down Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 10 through 12, you can read it there later. But we're going to read Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 10 through 14. In church, especially as middle-class Americans, I think we need to remember this. And I think this has been a problem for us in the modern church, even in the modern world. Verse 10 of Deuteronomy chapter 8, it says, "When you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you." You see, this is instructions for what was to come, because they were going to be prosperous in the promised land. Now already there's this warning, like, don't forget who it came from. Don't forget who's blessing you. Verse 11, "Be careful that you do not forget the Lord your God, failing to observe his commands, his laws, and his decrees that I am giving you this day. Otherwise, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase, and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud and you will forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt and out of slavery." This echoes what he said a couple chapters earlier. And so there's multiple warnings that when things go well in the promised land, because that's what's going to happen. You're going to prosper. You're going to do well. Don't forget about me. Don't forget about the Lord. Don't forget who set you free. Don't forget who positioned you to prosper in the first place. Because that is human nature. And it's easy for us as we read through the Old Testament. Have you ever done that? Like, man, how could Israel turn their back on the Lord? Man, they saw like a pillar of fire, this pillar of smoke. We think of the miraculous. Like, how in the world could they turn their back? Man, like a sea parting. You would think that would be enough, right? But human nature comes in. We become arrogant. We become proud. We think that, man, I'm succeeding by my own abilities, by thinking that I have developed these, not recognizing the abilities that you're using to succeed are from God in the first place. I mean, every good gift we have is from the Father. And here in Deuteronomy, he's saying, listen, don't forget the Lord when you go well, when things go well. Don't forget the Lord when you prosper, when you build your houses and settle down. Because when they were living in tents and living a nomadic lifestyle, they had to depend on the Lord. It was a little bit easier to remember the Lord's place in their life. And so James gives the same warning here. It's like, don't forget where you've come from. You may be very successful. Make sure that you honor the Lord. Don't forget that he's the one that gave you that ability. Don't become proud. Listen, a pursuit of wealth without God, or one that displaces God as a driving purpose of your life, man, that leads to disaster. The Gospels of Matthew and Luke, Jesus speaks very clearly. He says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and love the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Like, you can't serve both. You got to pick. And so James is repeating these teachings of Jesus. Does anybody have a dollar bill? I'm going to take a secondary offering. Anybody? Anybody got a dollar bill? Can I see it? I know we're social distancing, but somebody make an airplane, throw a dollar bill at me. Come on, Mark. Get past all your thousands and hand me one. All right, here we go. Watching online, here we go. This is going to be the hardest thing I ask you all day. Is this piece of paper inherently evil? Some of you think I'm trying to trick you. No, it's not. What is it? It's a tool, right? It represents value. Maybe the value of my time, value of a product. Now we recognize this doesn't represent a lot of someone's time or a product anymore. But this is a tool. But what Jesus is saying, like, this isn't evil. This is either going to serve you as you serve the Lord, or you're going to serve it because this becomes the most important thing to you. Right? He's describing a two-headed monster. Thank you, Mark. And so we've got to decide, church, do we serve our wealth or does it serve us? And you're like, well, I'm not wealthy. Listen, it's not about where you rank. All right? It's about what we have. And who's the Lord of what we have? And so James, as he's talking to these merchants, as he's talking to these traders, it wasn't they're trying to have a successful business. It was the fact they thought the business and their success was all about them and not about God. He addressed their arrogance. They were forgetting God. They were forgetting the one who brought them to that place. They were forgetting the one they owe their success to. Okay, the pursuit of wealth without God, man, it will lead to disaster. And so number two, I want to look at the end of wealth. And here we go to chapter 5, and you guys understand that chapters and verses are not divinely inspired. They were added later just to help us find stuff, and that's okay. But if you were reading this all at one time without stopping, so he shifts from the merchants, and now he starts speaking to the landowners, and that'll become clear here in just a minute. Okay, the Roman Empire really was only about 10% urban. Okay, but ancient Roman literature really covers most of what happens, in Rome and in the cities. And so a lot of people had this misconception that that Roman Empire was purely urban. It wasn't. Feudalism existed there. That didn't start in medieval times. It started in the Roman Empire. So you had these landowners that had people working for them. Some were renting space. Some were servants. Some were slaves. And he begins to speak to them. Chapter 5, verse 1, he says, now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. James couldn't pastor today because he wouldn't have a very full church. That's not very nice, right? And I'm not convinced Jesus could either because might not have been fun enough when he taught hard teachings. So listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. So I want you to put yourself in the sandals of a Jewish hearer of James's letter. Whenever they would have read last days, they would have automatically connected that with judgment. Because last days to them, that was the time of judgment. So especially if you were a Jewish hearer of this letter from James, they would have like, oh, he's talking about judgment. We go to the last days, he's talking about judgment. And James has done that throughout this letter. He's pointed to the end. We've talked about that before as he addresses both parties and he's addressing specific situations and circumstances. He has a way of pointing us to the end. And here he's talking to the landowners. And this echoes really an Old Testament almost prophecy, like weep and wail, because he's talking about what is coming. As of the writing, he's talking to very successful people that probably didn't have a worry or a care in the world. But what he's saying, he's speaking in the last days, like this is coming. There's an end to your wealth. The gravy train is going to end, okay? It's coming to an end. And this is very prophetic. He's saying this is coming. And if you remember when he wrote this, just a handful of years later, at the most was the destruction of Jerusalem and the temple. And most of the class that James is writing to here was obliterated. So this was a prophetic judgment looking ahead of what was to come. It's like, listen, you're going to have reason to weep. You're going to have reason to wail. And your wealth is not, it's not going to help you then, because there's an end to wealth. There's a limit to wealth. The Apostle Paul, speaking to Timothy, this young minister, this young pastor, had some guidance for him when it comes to wealth. He says in verse 6 of chapter 6, he said, "But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world and we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. Those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." Many of you have probably heard at least the end of this passage before, okay? And again, remember the dollar bill. Money on its own is not inherently evil or good. It's really how you use it. It's really the place that it holds in your life, okay? So I'm not setting you up, right? This is not an anti-rich message. I'm not taking an offering at the end, so I'm not trying to, okay? This is not a setup. But this is what James is saying. And then Paul, as he's teaching Timothy, like, man, godliness with contentment, that's a really good place to be. Look, and he didn't say godliness with being poor. He didn't say godliness with being rich. He's saying godliness with contentment. Man, that is a great place to be. No matter how much you do or don't have, if you can be content, and that is a great place to be. And he talks about wealth. You guys have heard it. You can't take it with you. Paul says the same thing here. It says, some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And here again, almost like part one, where there's just this pursuit of wealth apart from the Lord, those that have pursued wealth for the sake of wealth in a very selfish way, apart from the Lord, so they've wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. And so we see that end of wealth, that looking ahead of what is to come. And so let's look at the responsibility of wealth, number three. James continues in verse 4 of chapter 5. He says, "Look, the wages you have failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you." So this is a little bit clear. He's talking to the landowners, just as he did in the previous section of chapter 5 here. He says, "The wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you." So the law of Moses was very clear about paying those who've earned it. It's very clear. And most of these workers that would have worked for these estate owners were day laborers. And one reason it was so important was because, man, they're buying milk and bread on the way home. So it was robbing them of the ability to take care of their family if they were not paid the wages that were due. We're used to pay periods, whether it's weekly, bi-weekly, bi-monthly, okay, whatever it is. Most of us are used to waiting a little while. But most likely, he's speaking to landowners who paid people every day. They couldn't wait a day. I mean, they were poor. Their family was depending upon them. And it says that it's crying out against them. And the Lord is very clear that he would come to the aid and defense of those, and that he would even avenge those that have been robbed. And so the hearers of this, they would understand that. The readers of James would understand that. And then he goes on to describe this, you know, sounds to me like a big old meat buffet. All right? You guys like a good buffet with lots of meat? Like, I got to try every single one. You're like, you're hungry maybe after the second round, but no, I got to go back and get more. He's describing this in part because when they slaughtered animals or livestock in that time, there wasn't a fridge sitting in the other room. Okay? And keep in mind, the poor at that time, they didn't eat meat very often because it was expensive. Most likely, it was just at the Jewish festivals or special occasions. Was a lot of times the only times the very poor would even have meat. So he's describing these estate owners just pigging out. Man, we've slaughtered this cow, we've slaughtered this bull, whatever it is. Man, we got to eat as much as we can. Because even though they had ways to preserve it, it was a lot of work. And so they ate as much as they could at the day of slaughter. And so that's why James is describing this. This day of slaughter, this big party on an estate, and they are just, man, gorging themselves while people that worked for them went home without the pay that was due them. That's the picture that he's painting here. And then speaks of oppressing and robbing innocent people. And so the problem was not their wealth on its own. That's what I want you guys to understand, is that they were neglecting their responsibilities. Right? This was not socialism. Jesus was not a socialist. That's another conversation. So I don't want you to misunderstand what I'm saying. Jesus was about heart-directed compassion and generosity, and that is different than socialism. This picture is describing people who were indulging themselves while people they owed money went hungry. You guys understand that? You understand the difference here? So that's the picture that he's painting. The wealthy enjoying their wealth at the expense of those they actually owed money to, much less any type of compassion. And if you read the Old Testament law, even in harvesting the field, they're supposed to leave some behind for the poor, for the strangers, for those from other countries. I mean, it was a very compassion countercultural law, even in the Old Testament. It's not a picture that's often painted when people talk about the Old Testament law. There were more provisions for women and the poor than any other ancient way of life or document. So the problem here was not the money itself. It's how these landowners were using the money. It's how they were robbing others. It was how they were taking advantage of others. And listen, we all have a responsibility, whether you consider yourself to have a lot or little, that doesn't even matter. We have a responsibility to use it as directed by the Lord. And just as James mentioned in the last days, just as he mentioned the last days, even as he points towards judgment, we are going to be responsible for what we do in our lives with our wealth. We are. Little or much, that's not even the issue. What are we doing with what we have? We're going to go to the prophet Amos. When's the last time you've turned to Amos? I'll give you guys 10 minutes to find it. I'm just kidding. Okay. Amos chapter 6, verses 4 through 7. This really echoes much of what we've been talking about, describing very much the same thing. So this is in the Old Testament. Minor prophet, he says, you lie on beds adorned with ivory and lounge on your couches. Listen, I don't even have a bed adorned with ivory. So, I mean, this is some well-to-do people, okay? You dine on choice lambs and fattened calves. You strum away on your harps like David and improvise on your musical instruments. You drink wine by the bowlful and use the finest lotions. But you do not grieve over the ruin of Joseph. Therefore, you will be among the first to go into exile. Your feasting and lounging will end. Listen, he's not talking about the person of Joseph. He's talking about the tribe of Joseph. He's talking about Israel. He's talking about a multitude of people. And painting the same picture where the prophet is condemning those who are abusing their place, their position. And it says, you do not grieve over the ruin of Joseph. And so people were in ruins, lives were in ruin, and yet they were turning a blind eye to that. So listen, what does this mean to us? Where do we go? Okay, I see that we have a responsibility with our wealth, whether it's little or much. And we see Amos was used by the Lord to condemn neglect, to condemn God-given wealth used for the pursuit of wealth and self-indulgent purposes and their lack of responsibility. And I'm not going to read the whole parable, but you write down Luke chapter 12. You guys go back and read it later. It speaks of someone who has been given a lot and who's going to be held accountable for what they did. And the end of the parable, Jesus says, from everyone who's been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. We have a responsibility with our time, our talents, abilities, our wealth, little or much. What are we doing with it? Are they surrendered to the Lord? Have we offered them to the Lord? Are we using that to bless His kingdom, to bless other people? And so as we finish up here, I want to look at words of Jesus as well from Matthew chapter 6, from the Sermon on the Mount. Probably a familiar passage to many of you. He says, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And again, as Jesus is teaching here, the Sermon on the Mount, like he's pointing to the end of wealth, just like James did. Just like many other writers in the Bible, like, listen, there's an end to it. There's an end to it. But what are we doing with it now? And again, it's not the amount. It's where our heart is. Where is our treasure? What are we doing with it? Well, I would serve the Lord with my talent if, fill in the blank. I don't know why the blank is for you. I would give to the Lord if, fill in the blank. I don't know why that is to you. Or I would give more if, I don't know. Fill in the blank. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So this is more than just about wealth. It's more than just temporary pleasures. But we've got to live with an eye on the future. Recognize that this isn't all there is. Our plans, our pursuits, our abilities, everything should impact eternity. They should be surrendered to the Lord. You remember where we started, where the merchants were saying, yeah, we're going to go here, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to make money for us, blah, 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 blah. And James says, but you should say, if the Lord wills. And the point was, all of their plans, all of their desires should be subject to the Lord. Like, Lord, what do you want me to do? And he might have told those merchants, go and do exactly what you're doing, except use your wealth to help somebody else. I mean, there wasn't inherently wrong, most likely, with the jobs that they had. It was just they were not surrendered to the Lord in doing their jobs. They were not surrendered to the Lord in their wealth. And so are we living for ourselves or for the Lord? And here's my last question this morning. So what does your wallet say about you? What does your wallet... I know some of you are thinking, well, my wallet says I'm broke. Okay. That may be the case. But what does it say about you? Like I said, this is not a setup. I'm not taking another offering. All right? But are we living our lives completely surrendered to the Lord and what we do, how we spend our time, how we spend our money? Listen, you know, we've been praying as a church that we will be a church that embraces biblical generosity, that we can give away more than we've ever given away before. Why? Because I believe God blesses that. He's proven that in our lives. You know, we not only want to support every South Dakota missionary, we want to support more than that. All right? A few months ago, the Lord blessed us with an anonymous donation. I don't know who it was. It's several thousand dollars. And the board and I, we turn around and we're designating 10% of that for missions, because that's our end goal, that we give away at least 10% of what comes into this church and we send it out for the kingdom of God. All right? And that's a big ask, because most months we're not bringing in enough to cover our bills, to be honest with you. But I believe if we are generous and we send money out, we send money to Phil and Robin in Africa, even if we can't support them, if we bless them, Lord will bless us. Why? We can impact lives of kids and families somewhere we'll never go. Okay, that's kingdom giving, kingdom purposes. And then I believe Lord will continue to lay on hearts of people that can be generous, that maybe are in a position to do that. And even if he doesn't, that's still worth it. Church, I believe in it so much, even if 6 months, a year from now, I'm taking a pay cut, we're still going to give to missions. And that's not doom and gloom, because I believe it, and I don't believe that's going to happen. But that's how much I believe it. And we're going to be generous as a church. We're going to be generous and give money away, and I'd love to go beyond the 10% at a certain point, because we're not even close right now, but we're getting there. Okay? We're getting there all the time, and we're going to be generous. So I'm not just speaking as someone who gives to missions, right? And I've told you, we gave to missions when our tithe was zero, and we had times a few years ago where that was true. We're going to give to missions as a church. We're going to be generous. The Lord has blessed us. Blessed us as a church. All right? And I hope you recognize that, because he is not done with Cornerstone Church. We are going to go forward. All the stuff you see, we didn't pay for. Do you realize that? That's a huge blessing. That's separate than the other donation. The Lord is going to take care of us. He's going to bless us. So what does your wallet say about you? Are you storing up treasures in heaven? And listen, I'm convinced that if we will ask the Lord, Lord, what do you want me to do with my time, with my wealth, my abilities? And he's going to lead us. And so that's my encouragement to you this morning, whether you're here, whether you're listening. Let's take just a minute and ask the Lord, say, Lord, is there any part of my life that is truly not surrendered to you? Am I selfish in any part of my life? Whatever that may be, it might be something I've not even mentioned. So I just want you to bow your heads right now, and I want you to ask yourself that question. Lord, is every part of my life surrendered to you? Is my time surrendered to you? Are my talents, my abilities, my wealth, whether it's little or much, or anything else, my dreams, my feelings, are they surrendered to you?